The witching hour had come. An icy wind scoured clouds through the mountain's teeth. It was cold, too cold for snow. The wind cut through cloaks and gloves, made swords stick in their scabbards, made the men shiver at their posts. The clouds looked like phantoms scurrying over the killing fields and rushing up and over the walls. Thick, wide braziers of coal that were burning all along the walls did nothing to stave off the chill. The heat was carried off and swallowed into the night. Beards froze and muscles stiffened. The swirling, racing clouds were thick enough and obscured the moon and stars so fully that they'd be lucky to see 50 paces out. The archers would only be useful to about that distance anyway with this wind. Solon had taken a position on the opposite side of the first wall from Voss, hoping that if worst came to worst, he'd be able to help the men without Voss's interference. The waiting was the worst. Like every soldier, Solon hated the waiting. It was good to be an officer when it came time to wait. You could fill your time encouraging the men to stand strong. It kept you from having the time to worry yourself. Solon thought he saw something through the swirling clouds and darkness. He stiffened, but it was nothing. He turned to the men nearest him.
It's time! Remember, don't look directly at her!
Solon pulled out the beeswax plugs he'd been rolling in his fingers to warm and jammed one in his ear, then paused. He thought he saw something again. But it wasn't the outline of a man or a horse, but an enormous square. No, it was nothing. Around him, other men were leaning forward, squinting into the darkness. Then his skin began prickling.
Do any of you know how to tie knots well?
The soldiers exchanged puzzled looks.
I practically grew up on a fishing boat, sir. I reckon I know about every knot there is.
Solon grabbed the coil of rope tied to a bucket that the soldiers used to refill the water cisterns at the top of the wall.
Tie me up.
Sir?
The magic was thickening.
Tie me to the wall. Tie me so I can't move. Take my weapons.
Sir, I don't...
I'm a mage, damn it. I'm more susceptible to what she's... Damn it! She's coming.
Soldiers were turning, staring at him.
Don't look at her! Don't believe what you see! Damn it, man, now! The rest of you, shoot!
The former sailor looped the rope around Solon expertly. In moments, Solon's hands were tied behind his back, secured to his feet, and only after that was his cloak bound around him so he wouldn't freeze. Then the man bound him to the winch they used to raise the bucket.
Now a blindfold and my other earplug.
The man had bound him facing over the wall. Solon should have told him to make sure he couldn't face her.
Hurry, man!
But the soldier didn't respond. He was looking over the wall into the darkness, as was everyone else.
Lorna! Ellie! Is that you?
His face flushed and his eyes dilated. He threw his cloak off, then he jumped off the wall. He was halfway to the ground before he flailed wildly, suddenly aware, trying to find something to save himself. The rocks broke his body cruelly. There was a sudden flurry of arrows as men began obeying Solon's earlier command to start shooting as soon as anything strange happened. The fog billowed, and he saw the vast wagon being drawn forward. Surrounded by Caladoran soldiers, pulled by six aurochs, Solon's heart leapt as he saw a dozen Caladorans cut down by the first wave. The aurochs took several arrows and didn't even falter, but the rain of arrows was slowing. Across the wall, Solon saw men flinging themselves off the wall. Others were shaking their heads, each lost in a private vision, bows held in limp hands.
Don't look. Don't look, Solon. Don't look. I won't believe it. Just a quick...
The magic roared past him as if it were flying at tremendous speed. And then calm. He blinked. He was standing in the Hall of Winds. The magnificent jade throne shone green like the waters of Hokkai Bay. Upon the throne sat a woman he barely recognized. Kitty Wariyamo had been 16 when he'd left the islands, though he'd known from the times he'd played with her when they were both young that she would be beautiful. Her transformation had made him awkward. She'd reproached him for avoiding her, but he'd had no choice. He knew he had to leave forever, but he'd never been prepared for what the sight of her would do to him. 12 years later, she had grown in grace and confidence. If he hadn't known her so well, he never would have seen the slight apprehension in her eyes.
Will he still think I'm beautiful?
He did. Her olive skin still glowed. Her black hair poured around her shoulders like a waterfall. Her eyes still gleamed with intelligence and wisdom and mischief. Perhaps there used to be less wisdom there and more mischief, but those lips looked like they still held 3 lifetimes of smiles. And if she had the faintest smile lines around her eyes and lips, what a tribute to a life well lived. To him, they were a mark of distinction. His eyes swept over her body, clad in light blue silk nagika, cut to emphasize the perfection of each curve, bound at the waist by a narrow belt of gold, the silk looped up over one shoulder. Her stomach was still flat, athletic. There were no stretch marks. Katie had never borne children. His eyes lingered on her exposed breast. Perfect. She was perfect.
Have you been on Midkiru so long you've forgotten what breasts look like, my prince?
Solon blushed. After so many years of seeing women treat ordinary parts like they were erotic, and erotic parts like they were ordinary, he was thoroughly confused.
I apologize, Your Majesty.
Remembering himself, he tried to kneel, but something was interfering with his motion. It didn't matter. All that mattered was before him. He couldn't take his eyes off her.
You've been a hard man to find, Solonariwan.
Just so long now.
The Empire needs you, Solonariwan. I won't make any demands of you besides the producing of an heir. And if you require rooms for a mistress, it will be arranged. The Empire needs you, Solon. Not just for your family, for you. I need you. I want you, Solon. I want you as I wanted you 12 years ago and as I wanted you before that. But now I want your strength, your fortitude, your companionship, your...
My love. You have it, Katie. I love you. I always have.
I've missed you.
I've missed you. I'm afraid I was never able to explain why I had to leave.
She stepped close to him and put a finger on his lips. Her touch sent shockwaves through him. His heart thundered against his ribs. Her very scent suffused him. His eyes couldn't find a place to rest as he looked at her. Every beautiful line and curve and color and tone led to another and another. Smiling, she put a hand on his cheek. She had that same uncertain, wavering look that she'd had that last day when she kissed him and he'd nearly torn her clothes off. She kissed him, and her lips were all the world. She started tentatively, just touching that exquisite softness against his lips, and then drawing him out. She was suddenly aggressive, just as she had been that day, as though her passion had only been building for all the time he was gone. Her body pressed up against him.
Come to my chambers. This time I swear my mother won't break in on us.
She climbed up a tall step and looked at him over her shoulder as she took a few steps away, her hips swaying. She grinned devilishly and brushed the nagika strap off her shoulder. He tried to step up after her, but he slipped back to his place on the floor. Katie slipped the gold belt off her waist and dropped it carelessly. Solon strained to climb up that damned step.
I'm coming.
She shimmied, and the nagika dropped to the floor in a silk puddle. Her body was all bronze curves and shining waterfalls of black hair. He couldn't breathe. He'd thrown this away once, and he wasn't going to give it up now. Katie was just down the hall, smiling, the light playing over her lean body, her long, long legs, her slim ankles. He climbed back to his feet and strained against the ropes again. Katie wouldn't smile when he was choking to death.
Katie wouldn't be like this at all.
Mannerisms weren't similar to the girl he had known. They were exactly the same, fitted to an older face. A woman who'd been a queen for 10 years wouldn't let down all the barriers that fast. She was everything he'd hoped or imagined. The real Katie would be furious with him. The vision disappeared all at once, and Solon was back on the wall. He was staring over the edge, only the ropes keeping him from falling to his death. Around him, men were dying horribly. One's stomach had swollen to 3 times its normal size, and he was still reaching into the air, as if shoving food down his throat. Another was purple, screaming at someone who wasn't there, but he was no longer screaming words. His voice was a wreck, and every once in a while he coughed and blood flew out his mouth, but he never stopped screaming. A man was beating the stone wall with his hands as if they were attacking him. His hands were bloody stumps, ruined, but he never stopped. Others were lying down, dead, with no indication of what had killed them. Many had killed themselves by one means or another, but some had been scorched with magic or exploded. The wall ran red with their already freezing blood. The gate had been blown apart while he'd been in his trance, and dark figures were marching toward them now, driving the team of Aurochs pulling the enormous wagon. It was Kali.
Has Dorian gone mad yet? That was my little gift, you know.
Solon looked but couldn't see the source of the voice. He wasn't sure it was coming from inside his own head.
He's completely cured, actually.
So he is alive.
Solon wanted to crumple. They thought Dorian was dead, or at least they didn't know.
Let's get this over with.
You've been told many lies in your life, Solonarimon. They lied to you when you were growing up. They lied to you at Shokendi. They stole from you. I'm not going to offer you power, because the truth is, I can't give you power. The Veer doesn't come from me. That's just another lie. I wish it did. The truth is, the Veer is natural, and it's vastly more powerful than your pitiable talent. The truth is, Dorian's talent was weak before he used the Veer, and you know how powerful his talent is now.
It's enslaving. Meisters are like drunks looking for the next glass of wine.
Some of them, yes. The fact is, some people can't handle drink, but most people can. Maybe you'd be one of the people who can't, like Dorian, but I wouldn't bet on that. The truth is, Dorian always liked his special place in the sun, didn't he? He liked having you look up to him. Having everyone look up to him. And what would he be without his power? Without his extra gifts? He'd be so much less than you, Sol. Without the Veer, he'd have no gifts, and his talent would be minuscule compared to yours. So where would that put you if you used the Veer? Even if you just used it once. Just to unlock the hidden talents you don't even know you have. What could you do with that kind of power? Could you go back to Seth and make things right? Take your place with Katie on the throne? Take your place in history? I don't know. I don't really care. But you're pathetic, you magi. You can't even use magic in the dark. Really?
Lies. It's all lies.
Is it? Well then, you hold on to your weakness, your humility. But if you ever change your mind, Solonarion, this is all you have to do. The power is there. And it's waiting for you.
And then she showed him. It was simple. Instead of reaching toward a source of light, the sun, or a fire, or instead of reaching into his Glorvirden, he just had to reach toward Kali. A little twist, and it was there. An ocean of power being constantly fed from tens of thousands of sources. Solon couldn't understand it at all, but he could see the outlines. Every Kalidoran prayed morning and night. The prayer wasn't empty words. It was a spell. It emptied a portion of everyone's Glorvirden into this ocean. Then Kali gave it back to those she willed, when and as much as she wanted. At heart, it was simple. A magical tax. Because so many people were born with a Glorvirden, but lacked the capability or the teaching to express it, Kali's favorites would always have ample power. And the people would never even know they were being robbed of their very vitality. That didn't explain the Vir, but it did explain why the Kalidorans had always used pain and torture in their worship. Kali didn't need the suffering. She needed her worshippers to feel intense emotions. Intense emotions were what allowed marginally talented people to use their Glorvirden. Torture was simply the most reliable way to spark emotions of the right intensity. Whether the torturer and tortured and spectators felt disgusted, loathing, fear, hatred, lust, or delight made no difference. Kali could use them all.
My soul swan will find you now, and you'll die. You emptied your Glorvirden already, didn't you?
Be gone!
Oh, you're a good one. I think I'll keep you.
Kali was in Cenaria. The Ursuls would make for Ali, and the rebels would be massacred. All his service here had been for nothing. All he had just learned was for nothing. He should have gone home to Seth 12 years ago. He'd failed. They were coming toward him. There was nothing he could do. He was bound, and the horizon was barely gray. No weapons, no magic. The Vir was his only way out. Even if it was suicide, at least he could take a lot of them with him. Maybe he could outsmart her. If he could just survive. Fight, Kali. She wasn't invincible. She wasn't a goddess. He'd talked to her. He'd understood her. He could fight her. He just needed the power to do it. Solon's heart thudded in his chest.
Oh, God. Sir, if you are there, I despise myself for praying now when I've got nothing to lose. But shit. You just helped me to live through.
Solon's prayer was interrupted as a heavy corpse fell on him. Warm blood from the corpse poured into his mouth. He almost threw up as the blood spilled over his chin, down his neck, through his beard. But he froze as he heard a foot scuff on stone nearby. A soul sworn pulled the body off him, but didn't walk away.
Look at this one, Carl.
Another screamer. Love it when they do that. Must have pissed off the men, huh? Must have been one of the first to go if they tied him up like that.
The first soulsworn stepped close and bent over Solon. The man stood and kicked Solon in the kidney. Pain lanced through him, but he didn't make a sound. The man kicked him again and again.
He's still alive. Kill him.
Solon's heart leapt into his throat. It was over. He had to grab the Vir and die.
Wait.
The thought was so calm, so simple and clear that it seemed to come from outside of him. Solon held still.
The second I hear steel, I'll...
He didn't know. He'd take the Vir, then Kali would have him.
Shit! My blade's frozen. I could have sworn I got it cleaned off.
Forget it. If he could have gotten out of the ropes, he would have when she came through.
And they walked away. The Night Angel Trilogy, Shadow's Edge Part 1 is a graphic audio production, copyright 2008, Brent Weeks, published by arrangement with Hatchet Book Group Incorporated, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010 by the Cutting Corporation Incorporated, all rights reserved. With performances by Eric Messner, Laura Quinn Anderson, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Azelford, Tim Getman, M.B. Van Dorn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Rick Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johann Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Trozon. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed the Night Angel trilogy, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material.
Available now in graphic audio.
Many years ago, my people, the Togairu, were conquered by the Berenice. It is a situation that cannot be allowed to continue.
I know the tale. You are to be ranger in Togai, then.
That is the land I know. I understand the ways of the great oxen and the high tundra lions, of the black diamond serpent and the wild horses. Never did I doubt that my tenure with the Tuelafar would end with my return to Togai, my land, my home, my love.
No! You must run! All of you get out, or you're all going to die! Get out! Now!
You disgrace your father! Bring dishonor to your name and tragedy to those who brought you in to care for you.
It was an accident.
It was the logical conclusion to your reckless course. The inevitable result of who you are, Adrian Windon. And the proof that you are no ranger and never shall be one.
Were I to raise an army tomorrow, I would turn it upon Anderblock Innes and raise the valley. I would see Lady Dasaron and every one of her taunting kin dead in the grass.
Bear witness, ye all, for on this midsummer day of God's year 840, does Gilsepony Windon take the surname of Ursel. Hail to the Queen!
Hail to the Queen!
Don't miss The Demon Wars Saga, Book 5, Ascendance, Part 1. Available now in graphic audio.
Available now in graphic audio.
How far you reckon we are from St. Louis?
I'll be there in another week just about, I'd say.
That army of yours gonna be good and healed up by then?
It's pretty much healed now. I can use it without any trouble. Just aches a little every now and then.
Well, you best be careful with it. You want to be at full strength when we get there. Killing that bastard Beaumont ain't going to be easy.
No, but it sure is going to be satisfying.
Pony! Everybody, hunch up!
Hey, Dugan, don't you reckon it's about time you tell me what we're doing here?
Hear that?
Yeah, what is it?
Steamboat round the bend. What gets here? That's when the shooting starts.
Beaumont! I'm coming for you, Beaumont, you goddamn coward! I'm gonna skin you alive!
The First Mountain Man 16, Preacher's Fire. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.